Welcome to the Blazing Ember podcast, where we aim to amplify the voices of Latino professionals. We, Diana and Maria, founded this podcast to explore unspoken rules and all the ships, leadership, mentorship, sponsorship, and allyship with Latino leaders.
We are here to ignite your path to success with valuable insights. Bienvenidos. Today, we're talking with Carla Sanchez, who is currently in a new space, and we'll wait for her to describe what that new space is. But before we get started, I wanted to talk about Carla's fantastic career. She clerked for the Honorable Deborah Batts, who was an excellent lawyer and also judge of the Southern District of New York District Court. She was also the first openly gay judge on the federal bench. Carla went on from clerking to Patterson Belknap, where she rose from associate to partner, which is a tremendous achievement. She was a litigation partner who, you know, successfully litigated across the country. She represented plaintiffs and defendants in many things like mortgage-backed securities, pharmaceuticals, medical devices, and consumer products. And after leaving Patterson Belknap, she became the executive deputy attorney general for economic justice for New York State Attorney General's office. And I'm just going to say that I think you took a lot of titles with a lot of words in a lot of places, which makes it very hard for me to get through this intro, but I'm going to get through it.
The longest title ever.
I love it. And so as the Executive Deputy Attorney General, she was responsible for the Attorney General's agenda on a lot of different issues like consumer frauds and protection, the internet and technology, which I still remember when you had that post because that was super interesting, investor protection and real estate finance. And of course, I can't finish this introduction if I didn't say that she's also a Fordham Law grad, which makes me very happy. sorry, Maria. And with that, let's go ahead and get started.
So, Carla, thank you so much for being with us today and sharing. So I am going to ask you to kind of give us a little bit about what you were doing today, as opposed to going chronologically. And then we'll go back to your journey. And I know that we've talked before, and sometimes you've called yourself a citizen of the world, which I love. Can you describe what that means?
Oh, that's an interesting place to start, Maria.
Of course it is. That's where we start, because it's always good to know what people are doing.
It's funny. I don't think anyone's ever asked me why I use citizen of the world on my LinkedIn page. I mean, you're not allowed to just say, I tried some other things and I had to come up with something.
Yeah.
And that phraseology comes from, I would say, a new way of me trying to look at the world. Mm-hmm. I have looked around and decided that all of the ways that we divide ourselves, whether it's by country, by nationality, by profession, by rank, by hierarchy, each one of those things causes a division and conflict between two things, right? Because if you're that and I'm this, there's an inherent conflict. And right. Even with, you know, calling us all women or all Hispanic, all of those things create conflict in the world. And so I like to imagine a world where we're just citizens of the world, y punto ya, that's it. And what would that be like? And would we fight about things less? And so I don't know if that's what you were expecting.
No, I think that's great. I think it's great. I mean, it's a viewpoint. I think one of the things that I find fascinating about LinkedIn, right, is how do you describe yourself? And there was a period of time where you described yourself by I am X, right? And I think more and more what we're starting to see is people describing themselves by either what they care about or what they're passionate about or where they're going or kind of how they define themselves in a broader sense. And so that's why I love Citizen of the World, because it gives me an insight into you that goes beyond just your CV, right? Which I think as human beings, it's something we all strive for.
Right. To say I was a lawyer is just so superficial and frankly empty. It doesn't say anything about me as a person.
Interesting.
We needed that as the first question, because all the rest of it really is your legal profession, not so much who you are. And I think, you know, I know that again, we're kind of going out of chronological order, but I remember you know, shortly after kind of left the practice, and we'll get to that in a minute, right? Like your actual practice, there was a period of time where you traveled a lot. Was that influence your decision to be citizen of the world?
Absolutely. I mean, I quit my job and I decided, let me just travel around the world for a year. That's what I told myself. I was like, if it's just a year, I can come back. When after like 3 months, it was like, I'm never coming back. There's no way I'm going back. And so I ended up traveling for 2 years straight. And then I have not gone back to the legal profession. And during that time, what I say is that by stepping away from the profession, but not just the profession, from the city of New York, from everything and all the obligations that brings, even like paying the cable bill. I mean, it sounds silly, but all the everyday things, the minutiae that we have to do, all of that was gone. And so now I talk about myself as if I'm a vessel, a vase, and it was filled with work and obligations and bar associates and everything else. And it's like I poured it upside down. And so now what was I going to fill it with? And so that allowed me all this time to think about the world, to read books, to how do other people see the world? What can I learn? And it greatly influenced how I see the world, how I see life, how I see what we should be doing here. And very much influenced that I wouldn't go back.
Wow. Well, I can certainly get rid of some bills. I can understand the pleasure of letting go of New York City expenses. That'd be awesome. But it's really also probably scary to let go of the thing you've kind of known for so long, right?
And worked so hard to be.
Yeah.
Right.
No? I don't remember being scared about it. I think some of it's ego. You know, what am I if I... Before I was this, I was an executive. I rose up through the ranks. I was an equity partner, this, that, and the other thing. And so if I'm not those things and people are not lauding those things, what am I? What do I have to contribute? But I think that's all ego speaking. And so I had to learn to not listen to that voice and to look at my life and what made me happy. And being those things don't make me happy. So, and I have to say, look, I was lucky. I worked at a law firm for a long time. Don't have children. I saved my money. And so I was in a place where I could do it. If I couldn't, I don't know what I would do, because I think if I went back to the law, my soul would die a little bit every day if I had to work in it again. But I don't think about that right now.
Yeah, it's interesting because I had breakfast this morning with my moot court partner back from the old days. And he's back practicing law, but he took time off and he taught. He taught at a high school. Because it was just too much for him. And he said coming back for him made it easier by virtue of having stepped out and then stepped back in. But he's also in a place where he takes the cases he wants to take, right? So it's a slightly different world for him as well. But I love it.
But I think the key point is there's life after law, even if you leave before you retire, right? Or the profession retires you, one or the other. Yeah. I like the fact that, Carla, you're just like an example of like how you don't have to take the path that everybody else has taken.
Yes. No. And I know you're going to ask me like at the end, what are my words? for folks, but yes. I just feel that one of the most important things is to try to tune out all of the noise that comes from your culture, your religion, your society, your parents, your friends. And what is it that you want to do? Well, how do you want to live your life when you are dying on your deathbed? Are you going to look back and you're like, oh, man, I did this case in court and it was awesome.
That deposition was great.
I was a partner at a law firm. Yeah, that really? I mean, maybe there are people like that. And that's that. OK, fine. No judgment. Yeah. But that's not what I wanted to look back on my life when I was lying there dying.
Interesting. So now we are going to ask you about your legal life now.
Okay.
On that note, right?
On that note, right?
Over here, but
yeah. So, I mean, you went to Fordham, great school, right, Diana? And then you clerked, which, you know, for some people is just kind of a dream job, right? And I think you clerked for a very fascinating, interesting, very well-loved judge as well, which is also a great opportunity. Yep. And then you went to Patterson and you started as associate and you rose to the ranks and you were the first Hispanic partner at the firm, right?
Ever. Yep.
Ever. Yeah. Which is, you know, well, anyway, we won't comment on that. And then you became equity partner. So tell us about that journey, that path.
I almost feel like, I didn't know any better. So, you know, I was raised.
That's okay.
You work hard, you get good grades, you mm-hmm. translate those grades into getting a good job, you get the best job you can, you work your hardest, and that's what you do. And so that's what I did. And sure, there's trials and tribulations along the way. You know, a lot of people have stories, and I have a few about being a woman or being Hispanic in the legal profession. But what I usually generally have told people is that I put blinders. I call it the blinders, my horse blinders. I put my horse blinders on. I did my best to learn the strategies for getting ahead. And then I just implemented them, and like a robot, like a, you know, walking, so I'm walking sleepwalker. Mm-hmm. And so I don't have any like big stories to tell. It was hard. Yeah. It was very hard work. Working all the time. Mm-hmm. But I stuck it out and I became an equity partner. And the way I look at it is that's helped me to get to where I am today. If I didn't have that job, I don't think be in the position I am in now.
Can you give us the time frame, like what, when you left law school in terms of like what year it was?
Yes, I left in 95 and I was a 2-year clerkship. I went right on through, right? We did back then, there was no gap years and shit like that. No. You did right on through. Mm-hmm. So I clerked for 2 years and then I was an associate for 6 and then I became an equity partner and I stayed another 7 years at the firm in the litigation department. I was the first woman in the litigation department to make partner in like 15 years.
Wow.
The only people of color that had made partners before, one was Dick Parsons, who if you should know mm-hmm. the name, but you know, eventually became the CEO of Time Warner. And the other guy had been Secretary of War to, I think, Carter. So this was my, these were my precursors.
Wow.
Yeah.
Those are some huge shoes.
I know, right? I never filled them, but whatever.
That's not bad company to be in though, right?
Was not bad company. But it was, you know, like I said, I put my blinders on. So I didn't do a lot of looking around and self-pitying or anything like that. Not that wrong with that. But it wasn't until there was an African-American partner who came, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 years into my partnership. And when he came, and when I had someone now to talk to with about issues, I realized what I had been missing, how kind of solo it felt. You know, there were never mind Hispanic partners, there were no other Hispanics at the firm. No, there was when I first got there was one woman. She left after like 6 months. And from that period of time, until about the time I left, when we got someone who was half, I was the only Hispanic tenure partner track attorney there. And so, you know, my group was the Patterson Attorneys of Color. And so now I have wonderful friendships with South Americans, South Asians and East Asians and African Americans. What's the other Hispanics there?
Oh, my gosh. And, you know, and the thing is, the numbers are better, but they're still not great, right? So that is an issue if you decide to proceed at a law firm to go into partnership, right?
Oh, yeah.
But I think in many ways that makes you a citizen of the world beforehand because there is no other option. Like if you stick to just to your identity culturally in any space, I think even outside of the law firm context, you're not going to make it as a human, right? There's so much to learn from each other, right? From each other's experience that it you kind of have to become the citizen of the world or else you're just a citizen of one in some of these spaces.
Yep.
Go ahead.
like I said, like I had my little blinders on. I did my job, and I think I did it well. I love the firm because I do feel, especially when I left and looked back, I felt like they really did make me a good lawyer. I learned a lot of things. I had a lot of great partners who were very skilled and knowledgeable and practiced law in a way that I appreciated. This is not an ultra aggressive, scorch the earth discovery, write 50,000 discovery letters kind of place. And it fit better the way that I think litigating should be done. So that was important. The firm was important to my development as a lawyer.
So then you left the firm around what year was this?
So I left in 2020, at the end of 2010, when the administrations, the state and the state administrations turned over. So there was a new AG and a new governor.
Right. And so then this is where I kind of lose track a little, because 2010 was when I graduated law school. I think I met you around 2011. Cafecitos came about 2012, and you were at the
earlier.
Cafecito was founded in 2006.
Yeah.
Okay.
You just maybe didn't know about it.
I did not know about it. I barely know. I mean, I met you and Maria on the same day.
What?
Yes. And I've shared this story before in another episode, but I met both of you at the Trailblazer Breakfast. And I think Maria was getting an award. I forget what year it was now. Now I'm blanking. It's also late at night as we're recording this, and my memory isn't that good. But Carla, I remember somehow somebody said, go introduce yourself to Natalia Martin. Somebody said my diversity manager back then at Ropes and Gray, Bernard, was like, just make sure you introduce yourself to Natalia. And you were there. And then the two of you were like, meet this one and meet that one and meet the other one and meet this one. And before I knew it, I was just like, oh my gosh, I think I met like 20 new people. And then I remember just looking at Maria getting her award and being like, who is this lady? Like, this is so cool. And like, where am I?
That was a great year.
Yeah, it was an awesome year. But
Maria Leticia, who we did the podcast with, she and I were the same year. And Janet Muriago, I'm not saying her name right. She also was, and I'm trying to think who else. There was a bunch of amazing women that year.
No, Maria Leticia was later.
No, we were the same year because we found the picture with both of us in it. Isn't that hysterical?
I'm going to bet money.
Right, anyway. We may have to cut this whole segment.
We'll check this one again. But the fact of the matter is that Cafecito, I just knew it as when I started practicing, but I didn't know that it had been around for so long. And it formalized itself over the years. So maybe we talk about this now. Like, what can you tell us about Cafecito? So you started it when you were still practicing.
Yeah, I was a partner at the firm. And Natalia was, I guess, the director of diversity or head of diversity at Simpson Thatcher.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know you've heard the story before, but, you know, when you're the only partner of a color at a firm, the first thing that happens is you become chair of the diversity committee.
Yes.
They don't really give you any power to do anything, but you become the chair, right? Because, you know, you're diverse, so you must know how to make things more diverse. Okay. So I went off to a big law diversity conference in Chicago, and Natalia was there, and we knew each other. I don't know how we knew each other. I know her husband first, Edgardo, because he always likes to say that without him, there'd be no Cafecito.
That's Edgardo.
Yeah. And we were watching some videos. And in fact, in the video, I remember this the other day, Julissa Reynoso, our ambassador twice.
Wow.
She was an associate at Simpson at the time. And she was interviewed for this video. And so we were talking about Julissa and look what she said in the video and going over the stats and how horrible the stats were. And she said, Carla, I can't do her accent, but I love it. She said, we got to do something. Yeah, what do you want to do? What can we do? She says, let's just form a group. Let's get people together. I was like, all right. And I said, but I don't want any bar associations. No more CLEs, no more committees, nothing formal. I want it to be a place where we can just get together and socialize and help each other and support each other. She's like, that's fine. She came up with the name. And that was it. We invited everybody we knew. And Tip Patterson hosted the first one. And then it just started like that. People will tell other people. Mm-hmm. Natalia with her staff at Simpson.
Like, I know they did the directory. We had a directory. Yeah. So for those who are listening and don't know what Cafecito is basically a network that existed for Latina and Hispanic women lawyers in New York City at that time. It is now expanded. So I'll let you talk about that as well. But it was a place where we could go and for at least an hour or an hour and a half, be with our own. Celebrate our own, share stories, connect. It was wonderful. It is wonderful. I love Cafecito.
Yep. So it initially started, we always did Friday mornings, but, you know, and we didn't have them every month. And then Friday mornings didn't work for everybody. And so we started doing things at different times. And then when we started to get more established, we added a speaker. But again, remember, I don't want this to be a bar association, so we can't have a speaker like talking for an hour. So speakers talk for about 15 minutes and there's questions. And then right before the pandemic, we held our first Miami Cafecito meeting. And of course, we held it on like March 12th.
Oh, my gosh. And then the world shut down a few days later.
Lara Rios, who used to be up here in New York, was partnered down in Holland at night. And we were like, should we have it? What do you think? Or should we? I don't know. We don't know. It wasn't shut down yet. So we had it. And, but then we didn't have another one for like 4 years. But
no, now we had a virtual one.
Oh, but I mean, in Miami, we didn't have
another one in person.
Mm-hmm. For like 4 years. But now we're back up in Miami. And we've had one in Chicago and one in DC, and we just hit the 1500 member mark. So
what?
Yeah, all by word of mouth, and you know, we did eventually, at Natalia's assistance, she has all the good ideas, get a website.
Yes.
So I don't know, 5-6 years ago, we got a website and tried to organize the directory better, and that, so yeah.
And you got a logo. You guys, like, you know, finally branded.
Trademarked.
Yeah, we trademarked the Cafecito name. And we had to have like a little back and forth with the guy who owned Cafecito, but he wouldn't give up the URL, but whatever. So we got Cafecito Network instead. And Adela Hurtado, who's a Cafechica, designed the logo. And we're still not a 501c or anything like that, because we don't want that formality. We just want to remain an informal space where we can come together, be who we are, support each other, be as loud as we want, wear whatever we want, give each other job referrals, you know? So
I think that's the coolest. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I think that's what it does. That's the number one comment that I get from Las Mujeres when they leave, is that they feel refreshed. They feel invigorated. They feel as if they got like a dose, like a shot of some kind of energy just from being around each other. It's fascinating. It's quite interesting how it helps.
Yeah. I was going to say, just, you know, from my personal experience at the Cafecitos, right, aside from the fact that like opened up my eyes to just a whole group of powerful women who I could aspire to be, honestly, was amazing. But then, you know, in its current form, what I love to look for are like the shout outs, right? Like the shout outs and see what's going on with other people. And like, when I see all these like little tidbits of people doing their thing, I'm like, oh, that's so awesome. And so then it's better than LinkedIn for some reason. It just feels slightly more personal. So I it gives me a reason to reach out and encourage somebody, because you remember, oh, I haven't seen them since, you know, last year's Cafecito, whatever it is. And there they are doing the thing that they spoke about a year ago or 2 years ago, whatever it is. So it's always very motivating. And now that I think it has very much your flair, Carla, of all the cultural things, sometimes I have to read the newsletter in stages because I don't have enough time to go through all the things. But I'm like, look at that. There's something interesting going on in this place. Can I? And then I'll check my calendar and see if I can make it at you know, whatever event. But I love the fact that it does lack, or not that it lacks it, the fact that it just is not the type of programming that we're used to seeing in our profession, that it's just, it's kinder, gentler. And then even the, I think what's amazing is
you know, because, you know, you and Natalia are women, right? Regardless of whether you had children, didn't have children, or all the challenges you've had in your lives, right? The cafecitos are always kind of timed at a place that sometimes makes sense for working moms, right? So they're early in the morning, or that the professional who just needs to get something done before the day actually takes off, or late in the evening, and different locations about different topics, the hottest topics. It's just really super powerful. And I've always been grateful that it has existed since I've been practicing. So thank you for your work in that.
You're very welcome. And for those of you who don't realize, Deanna is talking a lot about the newsletter, which goes out every week. And the shout outs is very important to Natalia and I, because, and it's, gosh, it's like pulling teeth to get you guys to tell us what you've accomplished. She and I like troll LinkedIn and other places to find the most recent updates from women, because, and then somebody will write and it's like, oh, I really don't want to like toot my own horn, but I did write this. Neil, come on. You know, this is why we love doing this. We want to make sure that people's accomplishments and from everything, from writing an article to being on a panel to a new job to being a new mom, is shouted out. It's important. Someone's got to do it, right? Mm-hmm. But I do have to say, the cultural corner, that's all Natalia.
Really?
I love it.
That's all Natalia. I'm like, Natalia, what do you do all day? You must be like going on websites and looking at newspapers and finding all these cultural events all over the country.
I love it. I love
and
it.
And I do the same thing as you, Deanna. I look at them.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, there's
oh, always, I can make that.
It's like time out filtered by the best of filters. Like, you know, like I can't get that kind of stuff anywhere else.
Yeah. And we I try to keep everything pithy.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Because I know you all are busy. So that's why I have the, like, this is about a book. This is about a movie. This is about a film.
Right. Here's a link.
You know, you can people do don't like books. So.
And then you end by telling us to breathe.
Yes. So if people want to sign up to the Cafecito newsletter or follow or, you know, figure out a way to connect with the network, what's the best way to do it, Natalia? Oh, Natalia. Carla. Thinking of Natalia. That's why.
We're one in the same. It's www.cafecitonetwork.com/join. And you do have to identify as a woman, and you do have to identify as Hispanic or Latina to join. You got to check those boxes.
Is there a LinkedIn group?
We do have a LinkedIn group, but
it's not very active.
Yeah, I spend too much time on the newsletter, but you can't join Cafecito through the LinkedIn. If you want to get the newsletter, you have to join through the website.
Okay.
I've not found LinkedIn groups to be particularly effective for whatever reason. Not everybody's on LinkedIn. There's lots of reasons you should be on LinkedIn, but not everybody's on LinkedIn.
Right.
So we're going to go back and ask you about your time with New York State.
We're doing a bit of a dance here.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, many people would say, oh, and I'm asking this question because, of course, I kind of did the same, right? Oh, you're an equity partner. You're at the top of your game and you're going to go work for government. Now, you were in a senior position and you had a lot on your plate. But what made you go to government? And what did you learn from that experience?
Oh, I had some friends to tell me, you effing crazy girl.
Right.
Give up an equity partnership. But people do this all the time. People go, I mean, most of them go in and out. They leave their equity partnership. They go to government for a couple of years and then they go back.
They come back. Yes.
The reason I left was because I just was unhappy. I got to the point where the only thing left in the pro column for any of you who do pro versus cons when you're making a big decision was the money. And I had gone to the firm because I wanted to avoid financial litigation. And I ended up doing like maybe it was 3 years of residential mortgage backed securities all day long, all night long. And on the one hand, fascinating cases, right? Because we were doing stuff. We didn't represent banks, so we were suing all the banks. Patterson's is a mainly litigation firm. It has a corporate department, but it's court department wasn't big. So they didn't, we didn't have banks as clients, so we could sue them all. And so
no conflicts.
No conflicts. So we were developing the cases against, you know, that involved residential mortgage-backed securities, the thing that took down our, the world's, right, economy. Yeah. And so very exciting, but also just overwhelming. And I started just to feel that I was working very hard and not really being valued for the contribution. And I looked at this and I was like, I don't want my life to be like this. I got to be able to do something else. And so, you know, the good thing about being a partner is you can transition into senior executive positions into government. It's not like I was going to be a line attorney, which is nothing wrong with a line attorney, but this was going to be a new challenge for me. And So I thought it was time.
You know, I had always wondered, what's the movie? Is it The Big Short? That's about, like, you know, the mortgage. And I had wondered watching the movie, because as a lawyer, I'm like, I wonder what the lawyers did. I had no idea you were one of those lawyers, like in the, you know, the fallout of all that. I didn't know that about you. That's pretty cool. I mean, exhausting, but it's a cool.
It was exhausting. I mean, yeah. I just give you like one little example. You know, Each one of these securities would be hundreds, thousands of loans packaged as one. Wow. And you'd had to go loan by loan.
Yeah.
You have to investigate loan by loan. The amount of documents, And this is before AI, we were on the cusp of AI at the time. Right. I mean, at one point in time, I had a team of 90 people. At the firm, 30 associates and 60 contract attorneys working on the cases. That's a lot. That was a lot of attorneys for us.
That's a lot.
Maybe not for those big, big firms. It was huge. But it's what helped me probably get my next job.
I'm sure it did.
About it. How did it help you get your next job?
Well, because now I went, being an executive, you went into a management position, right? With 200 people to supervise. And so I think the fact that I had been supervising a big team was probably helpful. And I think the other reason that was helpful is that at Patterson, we were lucky enough to do a lot of we did plaintiff and defendant. It's kind of unusual, right? Mm-hmm. So I had been a plaintiff. I had done securities work. I had done consumer protection work. So I had two of the five categories. Nobody can do
recovering, right?
Right. So
that's true. That's true. That's a uniqueness.
That helped. And I think all the years of being in bar associations and doing networking and creating relationships also helped as well. I always say that I got that job too easily. There had to be a bunch of people whispering in the ear.
So I'm a person who is like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't know what to do. How do I figure out what, you know, what would you advise them to do in terms of how do you make your next step? What do you decide what to do?
I think it can be a difficult decision. Again, going back to the point I was making earlier about all the voices, I don't think we're really taught how to try and focus on what's my voice. What do I want? What do I need? And I think that's the only way to make the decision. I do my pros and cons because it helps me figure out what my voice is. And even if you put something on the list that might be something else, you recognize, okay, that's not really my pro or that's not really my con. So how much weight am I going to give that particular decision?
Because that's what the voices are telling you.
Yeah. There's a lot of voices out there, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's that ego voice. That one is really hard.
I mean,
you talk to people who are, what do they call them? Evolutionary biologists or whatever. They talk about how ego is very important to our survival. You know, help us.
Mm-hmm.
We're tribal. We want to be at the top of our tribe. We want to be leaders because that makes sure that we have our people around us and such. So to quiet that voice is hard, but it gets done.
Very good.
Done.
Very good.
Got to ask what's important to yourself.
Yeah. And I think,
And you know what? I want to say something here.
Yes.
What's important to you might be money.
Yeah.
And that's okay. I feel like we are taught, and maybe the generation has changed, but I feel like when I was growing up and you're not supposed to say, or maybe it's about being a woman, you're not supposed to say, I'm going to make money.
Yeah.
I think that's okay. If that's okay for me, go for it.
Right. Or use it as a stepping stone like you did, right? To both allow yourself to go into government and then to allow yourself now to be a citizen of the world. And I think that is whether it was intentional, not intentional, it's a method of getting to your end. And I think, you know, on the government piece, while we didn't talk a lot about your job, but a lot of what you did was good, right? In terms of good for public good, not in good as it, you were a good lawyer, but it was for public good. But you were able to do that because of the experience you had at the firm, which you keep talking about, right? This is setting me up for the next step. And it allows you to be very effective and very much aware and in tune with how you can use those legal skills to really help the world, to help the, well, at least New York State, which I consider the world. As a New Yorker, it's my world. But
a lot of people I don't think know about the AG's office or its scope of the tools that are available to it, the law. There are laws written that only the AG can enforce in New York State. Mm-hmm. And it really has a tremendous scope of power from not just the areas I did, but also areas in healthcare and worker, labor, criminal. And of course, then it's the whole side that there's the defense side where they defend the state, right? But I was on the affirmative side. And I do believe we did a lot of good work. I mean, I had 5 bureau chiefs. Each one was an expert in their field. I couldn't have done what I did without them. You know, they helped set the agenda because they know what's going on in their world. Antitrust. I don't think I had done any antitrust before I got to the AG's office, but I had wonderful bureau chiefs and they brought great ideas to us. And then I would fight to get them, you know, to bring certain cases and we usually would win. And those wins, they are on behalf of the people of the state of New York.
Right.
And oftentimes the way we picked cases was how many people is this case going to affect? Is it, we don't do cases on behalf of one person. Right. This is going to affect hundreds. This is going to affect thousands. This is going to affect the entire market, whatever it is. From what we have to choose from, it's a great thing.
Yes. So this might be a flashback, but the technologist in me can't help but to ask, you know, what did you do in the tech space when you were there? Internet policy or whatever it was. I remember you spoke about it like years ago. I just can't remember right now.
Let me see if I can remember. Oh. Hold up my CV. I know we did some work with COPPA, Child Online Privacy Protection Act.
Yes. Uh-huh.
I think that's it. Wow. If I got that right, I need some points for that. So we did some work of investigating websites who weren't complying with COPPA. We did some stuff around the online methods for ticket buying, like from.
Oh, you were pre Taylor Swift.
Yes.
Yeah. we did this when FanDuel and DraftKings first came out.
Yeah.
Gambling was illegal. This was illegal in New York State. So we brought a case against them. They lost, but eventually they changed the laws. And now we get to see FanDuel and DraftKings commercials all over the place.
Right.
We did some dark web stuff.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot. So Carla, we're going to end because, we could, you know that we could talk forever. But I love the fact that you're our first guest who is currently not really a lawyer, because I think that one of the things that people feel like is if you go through law school, you have to be a lawyer, right? Because it's so hard.
Something about that. It's not so much as she's not really a lawyer. She's kind of just left the profession completely, which is, you know, that's true.
But that you're not in the profession, right? Because there's a view that when you start in the profession, you're going to end in the profession. And yet there's other avenues, right? So I think you're just a wonderful example of there are other avenues and there's other ways to do it. Now I'm going to ask you, which is, you know, look, it's Blazing Ember is the name of the podcast. So we're going to ask you, what makes your ember blaze? Can you share that with us?
Yeah, merengue.
Merengue and travel or just merengue?
I've been traveling a lot now. I'm kind of tired, but okay. Dance. I love, there's no joy I feel in the world than when I'm dancing merengue, because that's how I interpret your embers blaze.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
I'm sorry it's not like justice or, you know, winning a case.
Oh, no. I mean, no.
That stuff is just no.
But I'll share something for those of us that were so fortunate to get the first incarnation of the newsletter, right? Which is why I always thought it was you. I thought it was only you, Carla, who was putting it together, because we would get these notes from Carla about where she was in the world. And it was always like, she's dancing this. Samba in Brazil. Yes. Flamenco in Spain. And I was still in the law firms and I'd be there just dreaming of the future.
Because her first travel stint, for those who don't know, was centered around dance. She wanted to go around the world and learn to dance. And so she asked if, and this is the other piece about the network, right? She asked, do you have anyone or know anyone that is in any of these countries that might be willing to put me up? Or might be willing to tell me where to go, or might be willing to offer me a restaurant, right? It was this big crowd surfing within this network that she created. And then she would share photos, to your point, of her in different countries learning how to dance. So I get the merengue part.
That was a great, the response I got from not just Cafecito, but other places. I ended up staying in a lot of friends of friends. Mm-hmm. Or friends' moms, or I remember one of the associates who I was friends with at the law firm, I stayed with her parents in India for 6 weeks. So I had a wonderful outpouring. Maybe, you know, that's one of the good things about New York, is that you really do meet people from all over the world. New York is wonderful for that. Mm-hmm. And I had people in all corners of the world open their homes to me.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And you danced everywhere.
And she's still dancing. You'll find her sometimes at events still willing to dance, which is the cool part of it all. Well, thank you so much for joining us at this late hour, even though people won't know, but it's a late hour.
I thank you guys for doing this. I love your podcast. I listen to all of your episodes. So thank you for doing it.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And so for our audience, again, please go find us, listen to us, and listen. And we'll be back with the next podcast.
And gracias, sign up Carla. For the Cafecito Network, right?
Sign up for the Cafecito Network.
Thank you so much, Carla. Network. Okay, mua, mua. Besitos.
Thanks for tuning in to the Blazing Ember podcast and our journey to empowerment. Look out for more episodes to keep your ember blazing.
Visit blazingember.com where you can connect with us and share your feedback. Hasta pronto.